Okay, today we will, God willing, finish up this sugya of how do we know Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. So we'll quickly summarize again. There's going to be two main streams and with one different stream. The stream of, if you learn that two verses in the Torah that say the same thing, we don't learn out from them. So we have the logical reason to say that we don't listen to someone who goes against Hashem. And between Shammai and School of Shammai and School of Hillel, we've each brought two sources that say there is a shliach to do an Avera, and therefore we don't learn from them. Finished. Now, according to the stream that says you do learn from two sources, now we have a problem because there's two sources that say Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. So he said there was another source called Shchut Echutz. And Shchut Echutz, the Torah clearly said there is no shliach for Dvar Avera when you shecht outside the Beis HaMikdash. And we choose that teaching over the other two teachings because it says Ahu two times. And Ahu, the first time, says there's no shliach for an Avera of Shchut Echutz. And the second Ahu is to teach the rest of the Torah, which is stronger than two just examples. Then yesterday we brought Hillel HaZaken in the name of Chagai Hanavi, where it was a machlokes, where if you tell someone to kill somebody, the Tanakhama says the killer is chayev, and Shammai HaZaken, the name of Chagai, says no, not the killer, but the person who sent him is chayev, which would clearly say that yesh shliach l'dvar aveira. So one whole answer was given to say, yep, that's what he holds. Yesh l'dvar. Well, how do we do that? Well, he holds you can learn from two psukim in the Torah, and Ahu does not teach us ein shliach l'dvar aveira. Finished. That was one way. Another way was saying, no, he does hold ein shliach l'dvar aveira. Why did he say chayav? Means chayav bidei shamayim, only in the heavenly court, which makes sense that even if legally the one who sends is in chayiv, certainly morally in God's world the guy should be chayiv. The first opinion says he's not chayiv. It means he's not as chayiv bidei shemaim, but lesser degree of chayiv bidei shemaim. Those are the two answers. So really, one answer was saying Shammai HaZaken name of Chavei says he argues with everybody and says yesh shliach l'dvar aveira. Everyone says no, he agrees ain't shliach l'dvar aveira, but he's talking about bidei shemaim. Now, third answer is going to be an in-between answer. Third answer is going to say, of course you don't say shliach l'dvar aveira, isn't? But this will be another exception. By murder, we'll make an exception. And that's what it's going to say. Third answer, shiny awesome, the case discussed in the Brisa of sending a person to murder somebody, that's a different story. Why? Because the Goli Rachmona, because the Torah revealed, I mean the Navi revealed when it says about David HaMelech, Oso harakto becherev b'nei Amon. You killed Uriah with the sword of b'nei Amon. Okay, in other words, the Torah is saying when it comes to murder, again, we'll say that yesh shliach l'dvar avera. So that's an exception, because the Navi clearly said, you killed him, even though he didn't. So, okay, it's an exception. What about the opinion that argues on Shammai HaZaken and says you're not chayv? What are they going to do with the pasuk? The Edith and the other person who argued, the Tanakam, who said you're not chayv for sending him. Well, hooray, but the pasuk says, l'cha b'cher b'nei Amon. It's the Navi says, you killed him through Amon. So how, what do you do with that pasuk? So Tanakam is going to learn that pasuk differently, totally differently. And it's going to not say that it means you killed him, it's like you killed him, but it's saying like this. Ma cherev b'nei Amon ein atan neneshalov, just as you're not punished for deaths that come through the sword of Ammonites. In other words, if there's ever an army, if you take your soldiers to battle, and enemies kill your soldiers, you're not responsible for what the enemies do to you. So therefore, just like on a battlefield, you're generally chayv. So af uri yachita atan neneshalov, you won't be punished for uri yachita as well. And we'll see why. We'll see why in a minute. But you're not punished for this. So the notes say, not only is David legally free from liability from Uriah's death, because there's no agency, he is free from liability in the court of heaven as well. That is, not only is the death sentence against David unenforceable, in actuality such a sentence does not exist at all. Why? We'll look at the next line. My time, what's the reason? There was another way of saying, listen, the pasuk means that the people who Ammon killed him, not you. And why? Because Uri Achiti did a big aveira that he deserved to get killed. There's a new factor we're bringing out now. Because what? Moreid b'malchus hava. Uri Achiti was a rebel against the king. And we'll see in a minute what he did to deserve that. There's a rule. Anyone who rebels against the king has autonomous power that he can kill him on the spot. Doesn't have to go to a court. Doesn't have to do anything. Okay? Now, rebelling against the king has many manifestations, and one of them is called chutzpah. You have to treat a king with great respect. And now, let's see what his chutzpah was to David. He said something very chutzpahic to David, and David was within his rights to just immediately take a sword and chop his head off. But he didn't want to do it so overtly, so he sent him to the field and let the Ammonites kill him off. Why? To Kamarlei, because Uri Achiti, when he reported once to King David, these are the words that he said. He said, in speaking about King David, and speaking about one of David's officers, he mentions one of David's officers in the same sentence as King David and before King David, as if to show that the officer was more honorable than King David. What did he say? And my master, look what he says to the king. He says to the king, and my master Yoav, who's the general, and all the sons of the king are encamped in the open field. Since when do you speak to the king and say, my master Yoav? You say, general Yoav. You don't say, my master Yoav. The king is your master. Right? Here, take a look at the notes. Uriah speaks of Yoav, the general of King David's army, as my master. In view of the fact that Uriah said this to the king himself, his words were improper and considered a breach of alliance to David. That's one meaning. Alternatively, Tosa suggests that Uriah's rebellion lay in his refusal to heed the king's order to return home that evening. The king told him to go home that evening. He didn't. This refusal is recorded in the conclusion of the verse where Uriah states, and I shall come to my house and to eat and to drink and to lie with my wife? No, I'm not. By your life and by the life of your soul, if I will do this thing. He didn't listen to the king. Be that as it may, he rebelled against the king, and therefore he deserved a death penalty. And that's why there's a machlokes. So therefore, the third answer is saying that this machlokes about sending someone to kill somebody else, the Tanakhama says there's absolutely, there is nothing wrong with, you're not chayiv for it. The other opinion, Hillel says you're chayiv, it's an exception to the rule. Only by murder do we say, yeshliach lidvar avera, and he learns it from the pasuk with David and Uriah, while the Tanakhama says, I learned the pasuk differently, and from that pasuk I don't learn anything wrong with that. So there's basically every possible answer to explain Hillel's opinion is there. The first answer says, Hillel says across the board, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aver, and he argues with everybody. Second opinion says, he agrees with everybody, Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aver, and he's just talking about death in the hands of God. And the third opinion says, by murder he holds Yei Shliach L'Dvar Aver, and everywhere else he doesn't. So those are the three ways. There's every possible. So we're inconclusive as to what Hillel Hasake's actual opinion is.
Yeah.
Okay. We only know that he holds that if you send someone to kill somebody, you're chayev. We're not sure what you're chayev for. Are you chayev for the actual murder in a court down here or in heavenly court? And we're not sure if that law, even if you were, is applicable beyond murder or not. So we have no conclusive opinion. All we really have is the general opinion, according to almost everybody else, that Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. We have alone Hillel Hazak in the name of Chagai Hanavi. We're not sure what his opinion is. Okay.
Since David was entitled to kill Uriah, because then the whole agency business doesn't have.
Well, that's according to one opinion. The other opinion says he wasn't. The other opinion says either he wasn't a rebel, or if he was, he should have killed him the right way. As, you know, be up front. You're being killed because you're a rebel. And if you chose not to kill him as a rebel, and now if you're killing him not described as a rebel, then that's out and out murder.
How do we know what was in David's mind?
We don't. That's why it's a machlokas. We don't know.
Alright.
Okay,
so we don't know. It's a debate.
So how do we know?
One at a time. I can't hear both of you. Yeah, I'd like to hear both of you, but I can't hear both of you at the same time. So choose who wants to go first.
Okay. How do we know that it's justified for the king to kill someone because he some that, rebellion.
That's a law in the books. That's a law in the books. That's on the books.
What books?
I can't give the exact chapter and source. That's well-known fact.
It's
a well-known fact. In Jewish law, a king, you look in the Rambam, Hilchos Malachim, okay, which we're going to be, learning, starting next week. So if you go to the Rambam, we'll get through Hilchos Malachim, he'll give us chapter and verse. But that's a law. A king has autonomous rule. If he feels someone's rebelling against him, boom, he gets killed. And rebellion means any disgrace to the king, not listening to the king or insulting the king automatically. So now there's a debate. You know, clearly Yoav did, this guy, Uriah did something. The question is, was it complete rebellion? Or if it was, why didn't David do it straight out?
Well, you wouldn't be able to marry Bathsheba.
Why not?
After killing your husband?
Why not?
Probably his intent anyways.
So. Why not? But he didn't do it directly. He just sent him to, listen, as far as public opinion, they just know this guy died in battle. That's all. They don't know anything else. No, nobody knows that David sent him to the front. That's not the, CNN wasn't around in those days. You know, where they're in every little locker room and this and that. A man on the street says, oh, he married a widow. He married a guy who died in battle. Okay, fine. Who knows the ins and outs besides David and Yoav and his general? That's it. He sent them to the front. That's all. He didn't do more than that. That's why it wasn't really, even if it was a sin on his level, on our level, it wouldn't be a sin. And on top of you want to say he was a rebel. Okay. But that's a whole topic that needs to be learned independently. But Bekitzer, we're not clear on Hillel HaZaken's final opinion. Yeah, go ahead, please.
How did David know that Uriah would be killed? And not everyone gets killed in battle. He could have come back.
You know what? Let me tell you. When they were preparing the Battle of Normandy, they prepared in advance X thousand amount of body bags. They know when you send people, you gotta remember in those, especially, how did they fight in those days? Hand to hand combat. Now when you send the first wave, you know, as good as you are, you know, you can kill 50 guys, right? But somebody's gonna get you. When you go to the front, it's always the first wave, you're done. Now, that in Normandy, the first wave, I forgot what they said, it's like crazy statistics, 70-80% of the first wave to get killed. Yeah. You know you're dead, man. So okay, is it 100%? No, but it's a high likelihood he's gonna get killed, and if not, then we'll send him to the next front line.
Okay.
That's just the way war is. War is not fair.
It's inevitable that he would be killed.
Not more than inevitable. When you're right at the front line, things are most likely you are going to get killed. And he would give, and you know, you have even today in the Israeli army under certain very secret important missions, the army tells you got to take out a nuclear reactor. They said the odds are you ain't coming back, and they take volunteers. Right? They've done it. We know. We've heard stories about that. You know, and the guy volunteers is willing to do it. So there are things, certain missions, you die for your country. That's all. That's war is not fair. That's all there is to it. Okay, now we have one last postscript to finish up this sugya. Okay? So what do we have so far? Basically, the majority of opinions say you cannot send a shliach to Navera. We have one way of looking at Shammai HaZaken's opinion that there is a shliach for Navera. And another way that says maybe only by murder do we say yesh shliach l'dvar avera. Okay, so now within that line that you are saying yesh shliach l'dvar avera comes on Rav and says even then we'd have to qualify that statement. Amar Rav comes along Rav. In Timtzel Omer, even if you want to say from these three answers that we gave in Shammai HaZaken that Savar Shammai Shnei Ksumim Boim Kechav Melamdin. That you, let's say like the first answer, that you do learn from two psukim, and from two psukim we say, and even the whole Torah, you can send a shliach for an aveira. And also, v'hu ahu lo darish, and he doesn't learn the extra drushes from the words ahu, by shkut echutz to override that. And imamish holds that yesh shliach lidvar aveira. If I send some to an aveira, it goes to me. Even if you're gonna say he holds that, but it's limited. Not every kind of shliach can you say it. What do we mean? He gives an example. He'll say he would certainly agree in the following case that you don't say there's a shliach to Rav Era. For example, Moda, he would agree, but Omer l'shulcho, let's say he tells his messenger, say, ba'ol es ha'erva, go have forbidden relationships with a relative. Reuven says to Shimon, I'm instructing you to sleep with your sister. Right? Let's say there's two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. And he says, Shimon, I want you to go sleep with our sister. Okay? Now, if you say, yesh lich l'dvar aver, if you do, then who would get punished?
The
guy who sent it.
Yeah.
Right? What if Reuven and Shimon, right in front of them, is a piece of pig? Reuven says to Shimon, you eat the pig for me. Okay, who's going to be chayev?
Reuven.
Well, no. if you'd say, yesh lich l'dvar Reuven.
Yeah.
Because we just said Reuven told Shimon to murder somebody, we say Reuven's responsible.
Right.
So you might think if Reuven tells Shimon to be immoral or to eat reiv, that Reuven will be punished. No, in those types of scenarios, Shimon will agree ain't shlich l'dvar avero. He's going to say, Shohu chayav, the guy who does it is chayav. V'sholchav pat, the guy who sends him is not. Mm-hmm. Now can you tell me the difference between murder and these two cases, why there should be a logical difference between them? He's saying, even if Shammai says, if I tell a guy to murder somebody, I will be responsible. But if I tell a guy to sleep with somebody else or eat rape, the other guy is responsible. Can you see a difference?
Benefit.
When you hire a mafia man, assuming you're not paying him, okay, if I want to see another guy killed, if I send someone to kill somebody and the guy kills him, who gets benefit from that guy getting killed?
The one who sent him.
The one who sent him, because for whatever reason, I want him wiped out. He's my competition at work.
Yeah.
Kill him, kill him. But the guy who kills him, does he really get any enjoyment? I mean, most people, you know, if he got paid, okay. But still, it's not, but if it's going back, in other words, if I want you to kill somebody, I'm the one who benefits.
Yeah.
But if you tell someone to sleep with your sister, then who gets the benefit?
The
pleasure, the one who's sleeping with them. The eating pig, who gets the benefit?
The one who eats it.
The one who's eating it. So therefore, when we talk about shlichus, if the shlichus of the avera is that the agent who does the avera gets the enjoyment of the avera, then obviously he has to be the one who gets punished. But if I do an avera for you, but I don't enjoy that avera, you ask me to steal something from somebody. So I go to their guys, I take the $100, and then what do I do with that $100?
Give it to you.
I give it to you. So who enjoyed the $100?
You are.
That guy enjoyed the $100, right? So that he'll agree. Why? Then here's the reason. Shalom atzinu b'chol ha-Torah kulu. We don't find in the entire Torah, zenehene v'zem ischayev. We don't find that one guy benefits and the other guy becomes chayev with the other guy benefiting. That is, if the one who actually commits the sin, the agent, derives physical pleasure from his deed, it is unreasonable that someone other than he is liable for it. Thus, even if, we don't know for a fact, but even if Shammai the Elder generally recognizes agency in cases of transgression, he does not recognize agency when the agent's commission of the sin gives him benefit. In these cases, all would agree that the agent, not the principal, is held liable. So in conclusion, we finish the sugya. In conclusion, we have the majority of opinions who say, ein shlich l'dvar avera, period. We have three different ways of learning Shammai. And even if we do learn that Shammai is zaken and says, yesh lich l'dvar avera, that's only when the agent does not get any benefit from doing the avera for him. If the agent gets benefit from doing the avera, even Shammai would agree, ein shlich l'dvar avera.
There's cases where they can both benefit because the agent gets paid, let's say, and then they both benefit.
All right, but it's... Maybe, and then we could maybe discuss that, because the truth of the matter is he's not benefiting directly from the action he's doing. It's an indirect benefit. In other words, when you're eating treif, the benefit goes right into your stomach. If I kill somebody, I get $100 to do it. I'm being paid to do the job, but I'm not benefiting by doing the avera. I'm not enjoying the avera. Right? And the issue is, who is getting discredit for the avera?
Yeah.
So if somebody pays me to kill somebody, well, I didn't get a pleasure from killing the guy. I got money to do my job for him. You see the difference? Even if you get paid, I don't know if you'd say that. Because the money is not the pleasure of the Avera. The Avera is, what was the Avera? You killed somebody. I didn't get any pleasure from killing the guy. The guy just paid for that. So we could debate that point. We'd have to look further in the Shulchan Aruch to see that. Have to see what the Psak Halacha is in this area.
The beast didn't punish both, or just the principal in that case?
Again, which case?
The guy who pays somebody.
I don't know. I'd have to look it up. I don't know.
Rabbi, what's the pleasure in being made to eat
food? It tastes good. Go to Maki Sushi and you tell me. Why is that place packed every night?
With Jews.
No, but not. But if you're a Jew and you don't eat it, if you don't eat chazak.
But
if
why
you
would
you eat it? I would bring
no one forced you. I said, I'm paying it. I want you to be my agent. I want you to eat this food. And you do it. Now, generally speaking, from what I understand, trade food tastes very good.
Because it's food, whatever.
Well, you're getting a benefit. Are you hungry afterwards?
Trade food may be, but pig.
Well, it could be made very nice, and we could probably serve it to you. You wouldn't even know it was pig if we put a lot of sauce on it. But the truth of the matter is, after you eat the pig, are you hungry?
No.
So you derived the benefit. You derived the benefit. You benefited that you're not hungry. You don't have to go into the kitchen and eat supper now.
Yeah, you know it's for. You know it's for. That's this example. Of course, you know it's right.
Well, obviously, if the guy's willing to do it, it doesn't bother him that much.
Yeah.
And I guess he wanted to do it, but you did benefit from it. Okay, that ends this sugya, and we got 10 minutes to start the next sugya. Okay, the next sugya is going to be called, if I send a messenger to do something for me, can he also be a witness for what he did for me? A very simple example. I send you to give a kiddushin to this woman for me. We already know it. Can you send a shliach to be Makadosh a woman for you? Here, I'm out of town here. You're going to that town to me for it. Take the ring, give it, and say on my behalf. He can do it, yeah?
Yeah.
But you also need witnesses. Kiddushin doesn't work unless you have two witnesses also. So can the agent also be a witness or not? This is the next machlokas coming up over here. Okay, anybody have any opinions on the mayor before we look inside?
No, he cannot because he has a vested interest in doing it. So he cannot be.
What's his vested interest?
He's doing it for his master who told him to do so. He's
first of all, it's not a master here. We're not talking about an abbot. Let's say my friend Sammy, and I'm looking to find another wife. Do me a favor. You're going to be in Florida. You know, there's a nice lady in Florida this winter. Do me a favor. Just give her a ring and I'll be married to her.
So because you are my friend, I'm doing you a favor. I have a vested interest in finding a wife for you.
What's the vested interest? You're not getting paid.
No. But the benefit to me is I'm doing you a favor. That in itself is...
So what's wrong with that?
Well, it's a vested interest.
No, it's not. You're not going to be married to her. You don't get anything. You don't get anything out of it.
All right. That's how I do it.
I'm saying you don't get anything out of it.
I'm sure the opposite is also true, but that's how I'm just...
If you did it yourself, you couldn't be the witness, right?
If you did it yourself, if I did it, yeah, I can't, if I marry a woman, I can't be a witness.
Right. So what's the difference?
The agent is you.
That's good.
Therefore, you can't be the witness.
Okay, good. That's one of the Gemara's svaras. Remember we said, shliach shalom kamoso. A messenger of a person is like the person himself.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, that's more than a vested interest.
Yeah, that's more.
It's you are the guy.
Yeah.
So one way of looking at it is, the shliach is just like the guy. It's just like the guy can't testify, the shliach can't testify. That is one of the arguments that's going to be presented. Now we got to figure out the other side of the coin. There is a machlokas. The other side says, no, he can still testify. What are they going to do with that idea? That's something we're going to have to look into. But this is discussion on the table here. Genusogye Itmar. The Gemara now says, it was stated, Rav Omar. Rav says straight out, simple, shliach nasa aid. A shliach can be an aid. Finished. So here's the way he describes it. If a person sends an agent to betroth a woman or to repay a debt, let's say to repay a debt, same thing. There's no need for two independent persons to witness the transaction. Instead, the agent himself can be one of the witnesses. Likewise, if two agents were appointed to do anything, both of them can be witnesses. Okay. That makes sense. Instead of paying a debt, here, go get the money and pay the debt. So now, you know, sometimes it's hard to find two more witnesses. So you'll pay the debt, you'll be one of the witnesses, and another guy will be the second witness. Now, in monetary laws, the facts of a case can be irrefutably established only through the testimony of two witnesses. It's also true in marital law. Although in marital law, the presence of two witnesses is also necessary for a more essential reason. Without the witnesses, the transaction itself can have no legal standing.
Right.
Interesting. For example, if I sell you something, according to the law, there don't have to be any witnesses. We need witnesses only in case somebody wants to lie.
Yeah,
for proof. Here, I bought that phone from you for $100. I gave you $100. You gave me the phone. It's a legal transaction. If we're both honest guys, we don't need two witnesses. But what if you're going to dispute it 3 weeks later? Now we need two witnesses to validate what happened. That's monetary laws. Kiddushin, we do need two witnesses to validate it in case one day the woman says, I was ever married to you. But there's a deeper reason. If a man just goes over a woman privately and says, you're married to me, if there's no two witnesses, there's no marriage. Right. The two witnesses is part and parcel of the marriage service. Keep that in mind. It's going to come up later on. Okay? For example, a man betrothed a woman without witnesses present, not only is there no proof the betrothal occurred, the act itself has no validity. The Gemara means that in both these areas of law, where the witnesses serve different purposes, Rav maintains an agent sent to carry out a transaction can also serve as a witness to it. So, according to Rav, he's the witness as proof, and for a marriage, a witness to actually make it happen, the wedding for it to happen, as a part and parcel of the betrothal. That's what Rav holds. Comes along Devei Rebbe Shila, in the academy of Reb Shila, they said, ain't Shliach Nasa aid. A Shliach can't be an aid. Okay. So now the Gemara wants to know, what's the reasons over here? My time at Devei Reb Shila. What's the reason of the agent of the academy of Devei Shila says that a witness can't be, a messenger cannot be a witness? See, if you're going to say, Ilema Mishum Dolo Amarle, if you want to say maybe, because the principal guy never said to him, Havi Li Eid. Maybe it's just because he never said, you are my witness. In other words, he just said, here, just go and pay the money back. That's what he was. That's a witness. But he didn't say, here, you are my witness. Maybe he didn't designate him as a witness. And since he didn't designate him as a witness, so therefore, he can't be a witness.
Yeah.
But Gemara doesn't like that answer at all.
Yeah.
Elamad, what are you going to tell me? What if Kiddush Isha Bifnei Shnayim? What if a man marries a woman in front of two guys? But the law, Amar Lai Matam Adayai, and he says, you're not my witnesses. Are you going to say, Hachanami, the law, Havi? You want to say it wasn't a marriage? The law, Havi, Kiddush, you're going to say it's not a marriage? That's absurd, because witnesses see what they see. You don't need to be told to be a witness. No such thing as a guy has to be told to be a witness. what if you're a witness, you saw a murder? Is the guy going to say, listen, be a witness for me to murder the guy? Right? You don't need that. So proper, right? Here let's look in 35. Since the person saw the act of betrothal, there's no reason why they should not qualify as witnesses. Find only one time. Okay, we're gonna skip that. But that can't be the reason. So in order, we're gonna say, the Lohavi. So that's a problem. So we don't have a good answer for that. So probably we don't understand the machlokas properly, and now we have to reframe the machlokas. Okay, or as we did, not enough was said to help us understand the machlokas. Ella, rather, we have to say like this. Rav Omar Shliach Nasa Eid. We say Rav says that a Shliach can be a witness, and we add in a little bit over here. A witness for what? Alume Koma Almane Lemilsa. Because it strengthens the testimony of a witness when he himself executed the transaction, he testifies about it. In other words, for sure the guy knows what was going on. In other words, if a witness sees something, we assume he's telling the truth, but how do you, you know, maybe he made a mistake in judgment, whatever. But we'll accept a normal witness. But if the witness actually executed the procedure, he can't have a better witness than that, because he knows exactly what happened. He knew what was in mind. He knew every single in and out was going on. He's going to pay the closest attention. So that's why Rav says, he can't be worse than a witness. Oh, imagine, here, this guy is Makadosh, a woman. A guy looks from a distance and he looks and sees it. Okay, he saw what he did, but this guy did what he did. That's better. He, Mamish, was involved in the story. That's the way Rav learns it. Devei Rav Shila Amri, but the Kamer Shila says no. Ain't Shliach Nasa Eid? A witness can't be a witness. Why? Kivan de Amar Mar, because the master said, Shlucho shel Adam kamoso, an agent of a person like the person himself, and therefore havale kigufei, and therefore he's like the person himself, and a person himself can never be a witness in his own case. The Torah does not consider the principal in a given case to be a valid witness. Thus, those of Rav Sheila's academy argue that an agent too cannot be a witness for the exact opposite reason of Rav. Rav says he knows it better than everybody else. You're right, he knows it better than everybody else, because he is like the man himself. And for that reason, he cannot do it. That's the machlokas. And what's going to happen next is now we're going to bring questions and answers from different sources as to determine who is the correct opinion.